You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
How are you guys doing today? And welcome to another Guidepost podcast, Bayou Boy Edition. I got myself here, Bailey, with Captain Ty Hibbs, as well as old Mario Maurice Campo, apparently. And we want to kind of talk about a little bit of what's been going on in Louisiana lately, politically, fisheries policy arena, and how it really feels like we're all just playing a game of drunken chutes and ladders, drunk twister, you whatever you want to call it. It's hard to follow. There's a lot going on. And I know myself and these two guys, we've all sat in the Wildlife and Fisheries building. We've gotten up and spoke at the podium. We've spoke at the state capitol about these things. So we have quite a bit of insight in the process and how we get to where we are today. So Ty, what's the current state of affairs after we finish off this most recent legislative session?
So let's just start from 30,000 feet is like a legislation overview for how things work. We had our 2026 legislative session. It starts in the early spring. Usually things are introduced about late January through February, early March at some of the latest. And that's how, you know, we get our bills. That's how you get our bills, our resolutions, you know, some things we've talked about already. But that's where all this comes from. You know, it doesn't just sneak up on us overnight. It's not like, oh, crap, where'd this come from? It all gets filed at a certain point, and then it's brought through either whether it's come from the Senate or it comes from the House, you know, the House of Legislators. But either way, you know, it starts there and it goes through everything. You know, it's multiple checks. There's a lot of people that oversee it. It is debated. It's read. It's assigned a committee. And then it goes to a designated committee chair. So like anything fisheries related, it's drafted, filed. Let's just say it starts in the legislature. It goes to a different committee. So fisheries go to the House of Natural Resources. And then from there, it gets, usually that's where your public comment comes in. That's when you hear us saying, hey, there's an opportunity for public comment on this bill or resolution or whatever it may be. Here's your chance. And then, like we always say, it's not the first and last thing usually. And then it'll go, let's just say it makes it through the House. It still has to get checked by the Senate. And then it goes through the Senate Natural Resources. So, and that's where all these things, and even from the Wildlife Fisheries Commission, you know, things we've dealt with in the past, whether it be redfish limits, obviously all the menhaden stuff, whether it comes from the commission, it's multiple different groups that it goes through, which is a good thing because you have opportunities to change things. But it's also a bad thing because we see in a lot of the stuff that happened this spring that the legislature, you know, we kind of pose that question, should they have the power to dictate a lot of these fisheries things? Because, you know, a lot of time either they don't know anything about what's going on. And I get, you know, legislators and senators have a lot of things on their plate. We're not saying that they don't. They do a lot. But man, when you get to that House of Natural Resources or Senate Natural Resource Committee, and you have things that are going on and some of these guys don't really have a say so on it, they're just kind of, you know, what's that guy think about this? It gets frustrating. So at least in the commission, people can say whatever they want about the commission, you know, but at least in the commission, like that's their only thing, is they should know about all that.
Well,
so
I just, you know, when I got involved in this stuff back when we were really starting to work on the redfish regulation thing, what's so striking to me about like how the Wildlife Commission and these state politicians and the state legislator interact when it comes to fisheries policy is, you know, first of all, a state legislator can just come up with a bill that's going to affect fisheries policy, and it doesn't have to start or originate in a Wildlife and Fisheries Commission meeting. That was something that was always crazy to me. I mean, anything can come up through state politics wise that affects these things without the commission's, you know, input and the origination of the bill or anything like that. And then, you know, there's also obviously this oversight period where anything that the commission does, the state politicians have an opportunity to weigh in and make changes or strike something down and suggest things. And it's pretty overwhelming how much power these state politicians have over fisheries decisions when we have a wildlife and fisheries commission. And Mario, I'm sure as a science guy, as somebody out in the field, it's pretty frustrating when you're the one doing the research, you're giving it to decision makers that actually understand and can parse your information. And at the end of the day, it ends up at the desk of these politicians.
Yeah, it's kind of a process that we see throughout many states. But that is also a testament as to why it's so important to have good advocacy efforts. And most importantly, for science to be communicated well, from the experimental design process all the way to, you know, the study being concluded and manuscripts and final reports being written, that needs to be communicated well by all parties throughout that entire process so that everybody involved understands, you know, what those studies, what those monitoring efforts are aiming to inform, what they're, you know, what management do these things, you know, looking to impact. And so what we see a lot of times whenever it reaches the legislatures is that obviously, like you guys touched on, is it seems like a lot of those decision makers in the room may have never even heard of some of these decisions that were discussed in commission meetings and such, which is pretty frustrating at times. And it raises the question, is like, you look at all the resources, whether state or federal resources that have gone into the studies, have gone into these monitoring efforts, have gone into making these final reports that will, you know, that are aimed to influence management in some capacity. And then it reaches, you know, kind of the tail end of these decision-making processes. And, you know, some of the most influential decision makers may not always have the best idea of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely it. It frustrates us as advocates of the fishery, you know, because we're just like, this doesn't make sense. But it's also a political game that a lot of these guys play too, because they know that they use that. Whereas the commission, those guys are, they're up there, they're not being paid to be there. They are doing this volunteering to do it. And whether it's political or not, it's not as political.
It's
but a lot of the
right now though.
Yeah, I mean, it's
let's be real.
it definitely is, and it's definitely been. I mean, it's gotten more political since our last commission has changed.
Everything's political in this state right now. Let's just put it
but,
that way.
I mean, as far as like the House of Legislation in Louisiana, the Senate. I mean, these guys use this as like, you know, past favors and stuff like that. That's what pisses us off. You know, it pisses guys like us who are like, we don't make any money on this unless it betters the fishery. And all we want is just a better fishery. So when you see things going for a favor, it just is like, what the hell, you know? So that's what, I mean, like I said, go ahead, Bailey.
Well, I was just going to say, just to hammer home what you're saying, let's look at one of the most recent kind of, large, you know, headline ordeals in Louisiana fisheries policy and this Menhaden stuff. You know, when the buffer zone was being spoken about, it was a decision that was made behind closed doors with limited access to who was even in that meeting. It was a decision that was made with the, you know, as kind of like a compromise, essentially, with the Menhaden industry. And then they went back on that, and you start hearing all this stuff. We had a deal, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not even sure who made a deal with who. And it's really frustrating that, like, that's the culmination of, like, great fisheries policy decision-making and compromise in this state is some, you know, what I found the most frustrating, and Ty, I'm preaching to the choir, but when we were dealing with the buffer zone, you know, issues and the repealing or the amending of the buffer zone, you know, we released a statement as ASGA talking about why you shouldn't do that. And all of us were saying while releasing this statement, you know, this really isn't going to, even if you keep the buffer zone, it's not the right thing in the first place. And that's what's so frustrating to me is like, you know, it's so political. It's so political. Even that thing, before the state legislature got involved with it, it's political. And then it gets even worse when it gets to the state legislature.
Absolutely. You know, I heard it best from somebody in that building actually said, you know, it's a swamp and some of the turds just try to float higher than the rest. And what a great quote that was.
I almost think he called it a septic tank. I mean,
yeah, I think
a
that's
swamp would be a compliment.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely a septic, the sewer and the best turds rides to the top. But yeah, so I mean, like we said, this was kind of, we're doing this not to really dive deep into anything that happened in the legislature. We'll go over a couple, you know, big things that happened if you didn't hear about it. But this is like a, hey, if you're wanting to, you know, you'd go to, maybe you go to Wally Fisheries meetings, maybe you see some of the fisheries side of it. Here's some of the legislative / you know, policy side of it that you may not know about, but this is pretty much how it goes. And, you know, every year hundreds of bills are filed up there in Baton Rouge, and some change fishing regulations, some change your, you know, affect your taxes, some never get a hearing, and most people don't know how any of it works. So that's kind of why we're here to talk about it. That's where it goes. And there's a lot of crazy stuff that's going on, and you know, it's changed a lot the past years. And then when you look at, well, maybe, you know, some years the department's reliant more on money from the legislature, and then all of a sudden you have a lot of just, why did this go through? Why did this go unopposed? Why didn't this go through? And it all comes back to the almighty dollar, unfortunately, more often than not. But let's just dive right into, you know, we kind of went over how it works. Like I said, bills, resolutions, all they're drafted, filed, assigned a number, read, assigned a committee chair, gets a vote on it a couple different times. There's usually at least two times for public testimony, whether it's going through the House or the Senate. There's usually at least two times. It has a floor debate. And then, as you see, you know, the final action, except on a resolution, which we'll talk about, and we had an issue with that too. The final action is the governor to sign it, which usually in fisheries, you don't see the governor vetoing many things ever. I couldn't really find many things at all in history where the governor's vetoed fisheries matters or, you know, had a say so in a lot of that stuff. But we had one pretty recently, you know, HB 688. That was the tarpon bill that you saw all over the place. And, you know, the governor vetoed that. That flew through smooth sailing, never had a single vote against it. And then all of a sudden it got to the governor's desk and he said no. And, you know, it was funny, some of the things that were said about it in his letter of veto. So you got things like that. And he kind of, his argument centered around a solution, in search of a solution, as what he said in there. I mean, he states that there's no evidence that tarpon need further protection. He said he can discern no corresponding conservation benefit. And, you know, I kind of look at it as, obviously there was some pushback from somebody, you know, close to him. And we kind of know who that was and where it came from. And it's just sad to see that a small part of the population, I mean, very small, we're talking one or two people, has that kind of power in a bill like that. But also it goes back to show you and things that we've talked about. We've talked about not bad bills, but bills that kind of just eat up political capital. And, you know, we're not here to take apart this bill and say why we think it got going. But it's one of those things where it's like, if you write, you know, if you really get down to it, do your research and nitpick every bit of that bill and say, why could this get vetoed and why shouldn't this get voted in? then I think you really have a bill that will run through unopposed and you don't have any open ends. And I mean, there were a few open ends in this bill that I saw. And then reading his statement, he kind of, you know, I mean, that's where that comes from is, you know, it could have been better debated on how this would increase angler engagement and tarpon abundance. You know, maybe it improves spawning success. Maybe it reduces mortality of the fish or prevents overharvest. There wasn't really anything set in stone in this writing.
Let's be real honest here. Just hearing you talk about that, I'm just going to say what it brings to my mind unfiltered. You know, we did all that with redfish. We did all that with redfish regulations. That didn't even make it to the governor's desk. We showed how that was going to benefit the economy. We showed how that was going to benefit the fish population, how that was going to create stronger, you know, spawning potential ratio and all these things. And it didn't even make it to our stupendous governor Landry's desk. So, I mean, at the time, actually, yeah, it was Bill Edwards. But what I'm getting at is unfortunately, I think you're right about these things, but what it boils down to is one guy, one powerful guy can make a phone call or one small group can make a phone call. And because fisheries policymaking is so politicized, and this is all over the country, it's not just in Louisiana. We just, you know, it's Louisiana. I mean, enough said. But you see it on full display in these types of situations. That bill was unanimously voted yay in the state Senate, in the House of Representatives. It passed through zero opposition at any time. Representative Orgeron is probably one of the more active fisheries legislators we have. He's always attached to these fisheries bills. I'll give the guy credit. He knows a lot about this stuff. He takes the time to understand. He's been on the show with us. The guy's good. The guy knows his shit. But so you'd think when he gets a bill completely through to the finish line, you'd think that Governor Landry would be like, yeah, you know what? This ain't a bad idea. But apparently we can't even do that right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's and it goes right back to a wonderful quote that will leave the author unquoted, I guess. But one of the best things I heard in that building was contradictions and hypocrisy doesn't bother anyone in that tall building. So, I mean, it goes, you know, that's where you're this whole checks and balance system. It's like, well, what the hell? You know, we get back to why are the biologists? The biologists are saying this, you know, so why are the biologists not get to say, have a say so? And, you know, he stated in a statement that he literally wrote word for word that a fear of unnecessary future regulation. I mean, that's, you hear that. I mean, Mario, you hear that as a, you know, biologist of fish.
Mario looks like he's about to come out of his skin.
Holy crap. Like, what a statement, you know?
You know, earlier when Bailey asked me that, I was really just trying to find the right words to respond. But, you know, thinking about this more and listening to this conversation that we're having now that we've had, you know, many, many times before, it just, the same thing keeps coming to my mind where, you know, we always preach that good fisheries management, you know, appropriate fisheries management is built on the framework where you implement human dimensions as well as incorporating the needs of the resource, as in the, you know, whatever species or ecosystem you're looking at. And so, you know, what the State Department does, in this case, LDWF, they do that. They incorporate appropriate human dimensions, you know, the stakeholders, whether it be recreational and commercial stakeholders. They, you know, obviously address the resource. And we see that, you know, if, you know, for redfish, for example, they say we need to take this reduction to reach the, you know, this reference point threshold, and the avenues to get there is a 4-fish creel limit with this slot limit. And then you could take a 3-fish with this slot size limit, you know, and then the public has their input on that. That is incorporating good human dimensions because it's saying, hey, the resource needs this. We see through our active management practices, our studies, that this is what the resource needs to, you know, continue as a resilient fishery. But, you know, how can we maintain and encourage angler recruitment, retention, and, you know, satisfactory through our stakeholders. So that's good. But what we see whenever, you know, these topics, whether it be something that moves from the commission to the legislature or a bill, a resolution, anything in the legislature goes from being, you know, what we see is this nice balance of human dimensions and resource needs from the department side to go into this special interest stronghold in the legislature. So, you know, it goes from asking, hey, you know, recreational guys, you know, whenever you go out on the boat, are you looking to catch more fish, bigger fish, less? That's human dimensions. You know, what are you looking for whenever you go? That's human dimensions. But it's also keeping in mind what the resource needs, because it's saying, okay, you know, we're going to keep in mind what you guys want, but we're going to also try to balance that pendulum of how does that meet the resource needs, or how can we implement these two to meet the resource. Right. And so, but whenever you reach the legislature, and you're dealing with whether it be the House, the Senate, or even, you know, the governor himself, you see a much higher influence of these special interests. And we see it comes from a much smaller group of people. And unfortunately, a lot of it can't even be rationalized. You know, it's like the tarpon thing, for example. Yes. You know, could the bill have been improved? Yeah, of course. You know, most things can be improved, and we see that with this bill. But the points that were used to counter this bill and ultimately veto it raise a lot of questions, because, I mean, all this bill really did, besides some of the things on the side, was giving Atlantic tarpon game fish status. And it's like, I mean, yes, we know that Atlantic tarpon is primarily a catch and release fishery, but not granting this species game fish status through the fear of future management is incredibly concerning and an ultra red flag of special interest stronghold, because it's like, I mean, what are we doing? You know,
well, who is to lose if tarpon get further regulated?
Nobody.
Yes, yeah, I mean, there's no money lost by any means, you know.
No.
I mean, let's just use a prime example. Let's look at a prime example with redfish, you know. We bring it back to another resolution this session, you know. We ban the killing of overslot redfish, of bull reds, you know, less than 2 years ago. And this past session, we get a resolution, just like we had another thing written last year talking about a bull red tag, and this year we get another kill bull reds for profit. And I don't care what anybody says, somebody's profiting from that. You know, this was all for a few tournaments to kill bull reds for their rodeos. So essentially somebody's selling a rodeo, you know, a rodeo pass for that to kill a bull red. So we look at that and you have it just gets negated. Just like that, you know. So it's almost to say, it's crazy to just see the tarpon thing just die like that and get blocked, and then to see something like, you know, future regulation? What are you worried about?
Well,
y'all
okay,
just gonna
Can
go
just
write
ask,
another bill to kill them again.
I just have to ask this question: like, okay, the bull redfish thing is a rodeo deal. Is that not the same thing with this tarpon thing being struck down? I mean, the rodeo guys are eating.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely that, which I don't know. I mean, I get it's a two-faceted thing, because.
Well, when was the last time Governor Landry went and caught a tarpon? I mean, I don't know. He's much of a coon pop tarpon maniac. I haven't heard of him doing that. So I got to imagine someone called him and said, look, dude.
Oh, well, that's what it was. Just
I
like
got
the
a big ass rodeo,
thing, you know?
And we put these tarpon on ice and then throw them back in the water.
Not really. They sit out in the sun.
Well, they don't even make it. Okay. They don't even have enough respect to put the damn thing on ice. But you get my drift. I mean,
yeah.
Like, but it's the same. Is it not the same exact?
It's the same thing.
Maybe not the exact same group of people, but it's the same. Like Mario said, the special interests.
Yeah.
It's a few guys.
It is
with
just
really
so crazy how small of a group it is, too. And, or each instance, it's just scary when you see like favors being thrown around like that, you know?
About our fishery. And let me ask you this question, Ty, because you're like the level of knowledge you have around the rules and legislation in this state. I don't even know how you guide sometimes. I think you just sit at home and read the rule books. But I got to ask. So did you know that, you know, if tarpon would have become a game fish, that you can't actually shoot them bow fishing? But redfish are a game fish, but you can shoot them.
Well, so that could, let's go back to the legislature on that. Exactly. So people ask me about the bow fishing thing a lot. And what's hilarious about it is, especially people that are like, oh, man, we got to do something about it. At least in the legislature or something like that, I'm like, what are y'all talking about? Y'all could do this. It's written as an exception.
Exactly.
So redfish is listed game fish status, right? And then they get game fish status. You can't break their skin. Can't do it a bluegill. You'll get a ticket for shooting a bluegill and breaking the skin of a bluegill in the state of Louisiana with an arrow or spear or anything like that, because it's listed as a game fish. Bass, too. Just side note on that. Redfish was written as an exception. I'm pretty sure 2008 was when that went through. And it's a, you know, it's an exception that was written to the game fish status rule. And so that's
one of our
the
most valuable game
thing.
Fish, by the way.
Absolutely, by far. I mean, you can't, I've said this just because my buddy Shane told me this forever ago. And it's such a great point. You know, can't shine rabbits at night. You get a ticket and lose your hunting license for shining rabbits. But what monetary value do the state of Louisiana does a rabbit have? I would say it's quite far under redfish, if not, you know, zero. Redfish are pretty high up there. But that's the thing. So two ways to look at this tarpon bill. Yes, it gives it game fish status. What does that really mean in Louisiana? Because there's always somebody trying to write an exception to something. So it's kind of one of those things that really pisses you off about this whole checks and balances and, you know.
Yeah, why didn't they just pass the bill and then get the rodeos to get an exception for that one too?
That was my thing. I think it was more of a scene of show of power to this one person or whoever made the phone call to the Capitol in that office and said, yeah, do this for me. And just as a screw you, I have more power than whoever was behind, well, you know, all this.
It's very troubling. I mean, I'll tell you, as somebody that's been from Louisiana my whole life and now, you know, has a business in Arkansas and has moved the large part of my fishing business out of the state, partly in due to a lot of these issues we're discussing. I mean, it's troubling to see how readily Louisiana continues to piss away opportunities to conserve one of their most valuable resources. It's pretty wild that we're still, you know, it's 2026. The redfish, like traveling to Louisiana to redfish, is so well known. I mean, how do these politicians not see what an economic engine it is? Especially these local politicians. I mean, if I was representing some of these coastal parishes, I'd be, you know, strapped in and fighting for redfish every day of my life. I mean, that's a huge driver for these local economies.
But yeah, for sure. And I think it's just, and it has gotten better, but you know, we're not, it what pisses me off the most is the 180 degree turn we've seen things go in the past, you know, 5 to 7 years. So at one point, the Department of Wildlife Fisheries was not funded $1 by the legislature. You know, they were pretty much independent, had a lot of power to do anything, but we didn't really have the science to back it up, you know, to make changes. We were still kind of early in the trout game, very early in the game of redfish and all these other things. Well, we flip-flop, we change the governor's office and all this. The department is the most well-informed I've ever seen them, in my opinion. I truly think they have some of the best data and more data on our major species, speckled trout, redfish, you know, than red snapper, which, screw a red snapper, by the way. I mean, they've done such a great job with it. I'm just pointing out things that have been proven. We have so much data behind it and such good data. Nobody can come in here and say they have better data or better biologists than our state does right now. But it's like our government, you know, these guys that sign off on things done by the commission or things that come through the legislature and Senate, it's just gone the opposite way. It's just like, oh, fisheries thing, fisheries bill that betters our fishery. They don't look at it that way. They look at it as it's taking a rod and reel out of somebody's hand, you know, which is just, yeah. I think it's such a bad, bad view to look at. I mean, me and you talk about it all the time, Mario, and I have a couple of things noted here. And, you know, everybody always brings up land loss and you know, rebuild land and all this stuff. Well, there's a lot of bills this session going on about, you know, we lost the Mid-Barataria Sediment Diversion Project that was voted finally just crushed after all the years that have been behind it to put it through. And like I always tell everybody, I'm like, I don't really care what goes on right now. Just do everything. Do everything for the next two decades because we got to do it. But then you see all these bills to put up a rock jetty here, a rock jetty there, to do this, to do that. And it's like, obviously, whenever there's something building land or rock jetties and whatever, everybody's like behind that. And they're like, oh, well, it's gonna bring, you know, it's going to attract the fish and keep the land around. Whereas I'm like, you know what would really help the fishery a whole lot more than a damn pile of rocks is not killing so many damn fish. We just slow down a little bit. And I think that's a lot of it, too. It's just it all roots back to this belief that people in Louisiana have had forever that this is something owed to them. Every fish in the water is owed to them. It doesn't hurt anything when we're killing them, you know, and it's definitely gotten better. Like I said, I mean, the science has gotten better. All the guys over there at Wildlife Fisheries Biologists are doing such a great job collecting a lot of science. And we've seen the narrative change a little bit, but it's just frustrating when you see stuff, especially like the tarpon bill, just go through unopposed. And whether it actually did anything for the good or not, it puts out a statement that says, hey, Louisiana's being proactive about something, you know, whether you call it proactive or reactive. I think it's more reactive that we haven't done anything about tarpon yet. But it just it goes out to say like, hey, look, these guys are doing something. They're being proactive about it. And I mean, you look at through all the bills we have. I have a bunch just written in front of me, and maybe I'll do a little write up of all this for anybody that's wanting to know. And maybe I'll do some kind of video of how to walk through LegiScan, because geez, what a great tool that is in Louisiana. I don't know if the rest of the country has something like that, but I feel like I crashed their website every time I do deep dives on this stuff, because I have so many tabs open. But we look at, you know, the tarpon bill. We had HCR5 for the bull red, you know, they kill bull reds for profit for the rodeo thing. And that was something that didn't have to be signed. Geez, how many?
Yeah, well,
we have the three Menhaden bills. It was a lot.
Ty, you know, definitely want to touch on pretty much everything you said there. You know, LDWF has done such an incredible job with being on the ball with fisheries management specifically. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't necessarily agree with that, because whatever they see, whether it's on social media or they hear it on the radio or get an email about it, you know, whatever happens at the commission or the legislature, they automatically blame LDWF for whatever it is. And I think there's a lot of people out there that have no idea of just how good of work LDWF and the people there are doing, you know, for our resources and the opportunities they're providing for not only residents of Louisiana, but non-residents as well. I mean, for instance, the Marine Fisheries Division, they just got some new technology for sampling in their saltwater electrofishing boats. I mean, they're getting young of year fishes right now, to the point where, you know, they can start looking at daily growth of these fish. They can look back and count the otolith rings on these fish and see, you know, almost to the day when these fish, you know, are, you know, when these fish are hatching, when these larvae are hatching, and, you know, you're able to get a better idea of spawning timeframes through that. You're able to look at, you know, have a better idea of reproductive dynamics. You're able to look at recruitment. Yeah. Like you're able to truly
able to
advance
look at a fish per square meter. Like, I mean,
yeah,
that's
I mean,
crazy,
like
crazy.
You're talking about historically, you know, they're pulling seines, you know, which is, you know, you got people next, you know, pulling a big net on the bank of the marsh and counting fish out of it versus, you know, you have this advanced novel technology where you're able to actually shock in salt water. I mean, LWF is doing such a fantastic job in advancing the ball down the field for proactive applied fisheries management. Like it's really impressive. And I really wish more people knew of how good of the work they're doing. And that's why, you know, everything you're talking about, the commission, the legislature, you know, it's a really big deal. I mean, you look at FWC. I personally know several FWC fisheries biologists, inland and marine. And I mean, they're some of the best of the best, like those in LDWF, but a lot of their work, like we see here in Louisiana, gets overshadowed once it reaches the commission and their legislature as well. And so we're seeing this common theme here where we go from good management practices to special interest strongholds. And so we've had this conversation about, you know, how do we give more power to these agencies? How do we give more power to the biologists to have, you know, they're doing great science, but the disconnect we have is how does that good science actually get put into active good management? Decisions. Good decisions. Exactly. It's got to go through the loopholes of decision makers and policy technical processes. And so you hear a lot of people kind of blow that off and they're like, oh, that would, you know, that would never happen. It just happens everywhere. It's got to go through commissions, the legislatures. But, you know, what if we really start having that conversation of, hey, how the heck can we give these earnest, hardworking professionals more power to do good science and good management the way it should be done? And, you know, we all see it time and time again, whether it's Menhaden, this, that, or the other, somebody sees something they don't like because it happened in legislature or commissioner, you know, they rain down on the state agency and the state agency's like, throws their hands up like, hey dude, that has nothing to do with us. None of us had any, like we're sitting shoulder to shoulder with you. We were in the room disappointed like you were. Like you think we had
commissioners testify on the redfish thing when that oversight period got, you know, on the eve of the final night, somehow right at 11:58 PM, an oversight hearing got called on the redfish regulations. And
what a crazy. Just
yeah, right.
Geez,
and here we
months,
go.
You
and you have commissioners in the building defending their decision, which was a landmark, proactive and conservative decision. Landmark. I mean, absolute, complete break from the trajectory we followed that got us into this mess to do something about it. And they do that. And so
and word for word was said the reason that person shot it down was because he had a couple of people call him.
Yeah, exactly.
In his district.
And I just want to say
this.
How
crazy is that?
You know, Mario, I'm sure you've heard this. I know you've heard it, Ty, because I've stood there when we've been told this. But, and this has happened, unfortunately, more lately than it did when we first started working together, Ty. How many times have we walked into a commission hearing and we've heard, well, we've heard from up top, we're not going to get into this because it's already a done deal. Or it doesn't matter what happens in the commission today because he's going to say no regardless. And that sucks. I mean, and you know what? Now I start going on my rant thing and I'm going to try to just like not go full-blown nuclear.
No, I love it.
But how disingenuous, how disingenuous is it of all these? This is why I work with ASGA, okay? This is why I advocate for what we do, is this. There are a lot of agencies out there that are happy to push a disingenuous false narrative of, hey, guys, we're doing something. These Menhaden bills are going to kick their butts. This tarpon is going to save the world, this tarpon resolution. And it's disingenuous. First and foremost, the process is not properly explained to, you know, constituents and anglers alike. It's not properly explained. And then what's really going on behind the scenes? It's everybody's so happy to just sit here in victory lap around a bunch of fake stuff. And that is what drives me crazy because we've seen it now so many times. The commission is hamstrung by state politicians and state legislature and the absolute mess that that is. And so that's why you don't see us getting on the rooftops and shouting, we won, we won, we won, when something good happens for the fishery in the commission, because it's still got to go through the gauntlet. And we experienced the most brutal bite of defeat in that way with the redfish. And it's just, I find it so misleading, these other groups, the way that they talk about this stuff.
Ignore it.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a disservice, Bailey. It's an absolute disservice, because what we see is there's these hot topics. There's these buzzwords associated with these hot topics. And then we see almost a copy and paste across all of these different groups on social medias, different posts. And, you know, you see somebody in the grocery store, they probably saw it and they're like, hey, did you see this? And you're like, oh God, like, let me break it down for you. This is what's actually going on. And I say that because it's too real. I mean, it's our everyday lives, whether it's Menhaden or this Tarpon bill. Like, it's just like, we live in Louisiana. We live in the epicenter of coastal habitat loss in the entire world. Okay. You know, we have so many different, amazing fisheries here. I mean, our whole state is what we call in fisheries management, a coupled human and natural system, which is incredible, because you have so many people interacting with so many resources. But it seems like there's only like one or two topics that are talked about day after day after day. Like, why aren't we talking about water quality? Why aren't we talking about, you know, this fishery, or you know, good, recreational fishing practices? Or, you know, is it about how many redfish they pulled out of the water as bycatch? Or is it the, you know, millions of pounds of forage fish that they pulled out of the water? You know, what's the difference? Like, what are the interests? Like what skin do you actually have in this game? Is it to cause a ruckus, or is it actually to have an actual impact? And so what we see is, you know, it's a bunch of, you know, pseudo conservation efforts, because it really just comes down to a whole lot of hoopla. You've been around this whole time. You've been making all this ruckus. You sunk a couple reef balls. Congrats. What do you have to show for it? What do you have to show for it? You know, like, are you funding research? Are you collaborating with academics and agencies? Are you talking about needed management issues?
Politicians fishing, baby. That's what we're doing.
Now, oh, I mean, and I'm not talking. Social. I'm not talking about one organization in particular. I mean, there's 10 of them. It doesn't matter. I'm just simply saying they're special interest groups that are influenced by special interest ideas, and they drive the majority of these decisions. And it's sad to see, but we've seen it time and time again, from Maine to Texas. You know, it's what it is. And that's why we continue having these conversations, because that needs to change. Because true, honest folks, whether you're in the commercial side or the recreational side, you deserve to know the truth. And it's up to you on which side you want to stand on. But we're going to do our best effort for you to know the truth so we can make a decision.
Well, Ty, how many people have you seen, because you've been involved in this kind of advocacy for a long time, you know, before you were associated with ASGA? I'm sure you'd say this. You can say it. How many more people have you seen actually get educated and involved on these issues as far as just a general populace goes?
I mean, other than the little bit that I've tried over the years, or since we've been doing stuff with ASGA. I mean, that was one of my things with Tony and ASGA and all. I was like, it was the first time, you know, everybody's heard me say this a billion times, so I'm not going to reiterate what I've said, but it's the first time in this history of me doing this for, I don't even know how long now, you know, pre-COVID, which feels like a century. But it's the first time that I saw a group, or at least one person representing a group, like, no. The science behind it, the actual science, not what the wildlife fisheries presentation said. And that was when that was a holy crap education is the way we do this. Here's the way to do it. You know, and well, I love
educating the person
and giving them the decision to make after that. And that's never happened before. I've never seen any group down here do that.
In the building, how many more people are you seeing at these hearings and being at these, you know, these big hearings, I guess is what I'm trying to get to, is like just how many more people are involved than, you know, 10, 12 years ago?
I'll put it to you this way. For as many people as some of these groups claim to represent, and you think the power that they've had for being around so many years, there should be 500 people in some of these meetings, you know, and some of the Menhaden stuff we've had more just because it touches so many aspects of it. But what I love seeing, whether they're there with us or not, is somebody that's actually educated on it, speaking on from their own terms of science and not just getting up there saying, yeah, what he said, you know, yeah, what he said, yeah, I'm this person, so listen to me, this is what I think. You know, it's based on the biologists, based on the stock assessment. You know, I've never seen much stuff like that. It's been very few people over the years, and it was such a breath of fresh air to do more stuff like that and really educate. And that was my thing from the beginning, is being in these meetings early on, is seeing these people, and it's just, hey, go say this. I don't want anybody to ever come to me and say, can you write me something? I'll just read it word for word. You know, I want them to say, hey, can you educate me on this? And you go say, you know, whatever you think. And that's the difference that we've seen since, you know, ASGA has been around. And I feel like I've gotten better at that. Before, I was like, well, I could talk your head off about what I read in the stock assessment and all this, and here's what I know from the science side. But policy was where I kind of didn't know as much, or how these politicians work and stuff like that. So it's been really helpful for a lot of that.
Well, I guess what I'm kind of getting at with the line of question here is like, the appetite for activism in this state is at an all-time high. We have more people invested in policy, whether it be, you know, the Menhaden thing, the Redfish stuff, this Tarpon thing. You know, let us not forget, this was a, you know, Orgeron said it himself, it was a bill from LWF or whatever. So, you know, Louisiana Wildlife Federation hasn't always been super involved in fisheries stuff. Apparently this was Mr. Rick Owens's bill, essentially, that got shot down at the end of it all. But all that to say, there's a lot more people involved in this. The public's so involved, and it sure would be nice to see, like, you know what, really, to sum it up for me, you would think in state politics, that is kind of the, like, where the constituents get to voice and the check and balance of the populace and the general public is weighed in on these fisheries decisions, but it's actually where it is the least. That is where the least amount of public opinion matters, because the reality of our political system is it's controlled by a few large, you know, large donor entities, and there's money and basically influence is money, and money is power, and that's where we are. And every fisheries decision, whether it be originating on the desk of a politician or in the commission and voted on with public opinion and et cetera, it all ends up in the same spot, and it ends up having to go through an oversight hearing or the governor's desk or the Senate floor or whatever. And it sure would be nice if we could get away from that a little bit. Don't you guys think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You mean Bailey, something bizarre, you know, like biologists making fisheries decisions? That's crazy talk, Bailey.
Yeah. And well, Bailey, one thing that kind of came to mind was thinking back to, you know, some of the redfish and speckled trout, even some of the Menhaden talks we had, whether it was with the commission or it was in the, you know, the House Joint Committee of Natural Resources, you know, there were testimonies from many, many, many different people. And, you know, some of those had a good portion of folks that flew in from other states or drove in from other states because they cared so much about these fisheries.
That's a great point.
And it was kind of crazy to be on the outside and hear people in positions of, you know, in elected positions or appointed positions, whether they were in the commission or the legislature, make remarks, kind of offhand remarks, that we only care about resident comments. And that blew me, that absolutely
or
blew
asking
me away.
What, how we fish. I was asked on the podium, what style of fishing do I engage in?
Because it was, you know, one thing with that is like, first off, these aren't stocked bass in a farm pond.
Yeah,
okay.
These are like, who gets to say that one type of fishing gets better management than another type of fishing, you know?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, these aren't farm pond fish. They don't have bounds. Like, they exist in the estuaries of the Gulf of just in the Gulf. They exist in the estuaries of the Gulf, okay? Of Mexico, America, whatever you want to call it. And so, like, these fish don't know state boundaries. They know natal estuaries. They know, you know, where to go, where to return, but they don't know, you know, freaking state
boundaries. They don't know the name of their state representative.
Yeah, so that, yeah. So,
like,
I
a
mean,
lot of
like,
residents in Louisiana, just saying.
I was about to say, and so, and mean, so, you talk about people. And so,
yeah, and so, I mean, it's just to hear that there's this sense of, like, political ownership of these fish, of these resources. I mean, that's, it's kind of absurd. I mean, you know, as an appointed or elected official, like, you represent your constituents. You don't own your constituents, and you dang sure don't own the resources. And so we
can't. And neither do the constituents, for God's sakes. I mean, why should I, as a St. Bernard resident, have ownership of these damn redfish?
Yeah,
well,
that's
what I always say. You know, in the guide, when you have those people screaming, the loudest ones in a room, and it's usually not many of them, but they're screaming, fighting against us, against conservation. And it's like, I think they really do think they own the fish. They treat it like that's their own share of profit. And that I look, you know, like I always say, I know it's a job. I know at the end of the day, I make money guiding and all, but I don't know, man. I just look at it as a privilege. It's a privilege to get to do what I get to do and go work at a plant or do whatever else, you know, probably make better money and have less stress in my life for sure. But, I don't know. I just look at it. It's a privilege. So I'm just like, you take care of it. How many times have you heard that if you love something, you'll take care of it? I look at that type of person as they don't love it. They're just doing this for a paycheck. They don't look at it as a privilege. So I'm like, why are you even doing this? Because you always have, or because you just were taught it's the way. And I get that. If you want to say that's the only way I know, because it's the only way I've ever done it, it's the only way I've been taught. I mean, you're looking at somebody who, I can remember being, you know, in a little flatboat when I was a teenager, running around Hope Dale Lagoon, being pissed off that we only have 42 speckled trout, not 50. You know, like, I don't know. I just look at it like, man, I learned it, and I just remember killing a whole lot of fish throughout my life and really understanding that this is a privilege, and that's my business partner.
Well, that's like that's a really good point, Ty. And I mean, you know, growing up in Louisiana, we all grew up by the box. How many boxes did you get? Did you fill the box? You know, I mean, I remember being, you know, a kid fishing the rocks off the Mr. Go, and speckled trout are all over the floor of the boat. And the only care you had in the world was, you know, how many more speckled trout can I put in this boat? And it's like, I mean, look, we all go through it. If you're the guy that wants to, you know, be limited out by 7 o'clock and then, you know, get back to the dock, good for you. If you're the guy that wants to pole a flat until the sun goes down, good for you. But we're all called to be good stewards of these resources that we all get to share and take part of, which brings me to the point of it's not our constitutional right. Okay, it's not our constitutional right to be able to interact and essentially own these resources by any bounds that we deem necessary. It's actually the constitutional right of the management bodies to appropriately manage them, and then it's our constitutional right to abide by those laws. So that whenever you talk about the Constitution, that's how the Constitution is framed. And, you know, it's like we see it everywhere. Okay. Like we see it, this, you know, tarpon Everglade tarpon guides using, forward facing sonar, people fishing speckled trout and redfish in Louisiana. Like, it's, everybody has this idea. I say everybody, a lot of folks have this idea that it is our constitutional right of freedom to harvest as many fish however we want, but it is our privilege to be able to do so. And we need to support those that have the constitutional right to manage these fisheries the way they need to be. So it just goes back to be a good human, be a good steward of the resources that we get to be so lucky to interact with. If you've got kids, teach them how to do it the right way as well. That's super important. So it just comes back to, be thankful for what we have and do your best with it.
Well, I don't know if we'll ever find this because it doesn't seem to be in their nature to do such a thing, but it's funny we're talking about this. I think I was talking to Tony the other day. I was listening to another very extremely popular podcast talking about the roadless rule. It wasn't the one we did. It was on another podcast. And the discussion was really about how, these politicians getting involved in any kind of, natural resource conservation stuff, outdoor conservation stuff is just there. It's really not the right place. This is such a, and especially in today's world where the reality is you need, I always say to get involved in Louisiana fisheries policy, you basically need to have like a master's degree in fisheries stuff, and then you got to have like a PhD in Louisiana politics. You really got to understand some rabbit holes, two very different complex subjects to even stand a chance. And I think that it would be nice to find some politicians that for once could say, you know what, guys, let us step out of the way. Let us step back from the equation. Let us let the guys that have spent their entire lives out in the field researching these things and now are in a position to make a decision for the good of the state. Let's get these guys more agency and really see what we can do with the resource. I think that's what the conversation should be shifting to.
Yeah, absolutely. And, even beyond that, if that can never come to fruition, it would be refreshing to see every legislator in the room be educated on the topic at hand versus looking at their peer going, I plead the fifth,
yay or nay.
What you got on
yay
it.
Or nay.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Mandatory test on the subject at hand.
Well,
like,
it might be easier to just get them out of there. Let's be honest.
Probably
like,
so.
They would probably. Who wants to sit there and figure out about how you got to, listen, you got to sit here and listen to Mario talk about Odalis for 30 minutes or some. And, it's a lot.
They got all that carbon capture stuff in their brains. Mario just cringing.
Well, on this
Mario,
podcast,
I think you do a great
not
job
on this episode.
That all goes back to, I get it's a lot, but like, man, you see us, we're so passionate about some of this stuff because this is our livelihood. This is our livelihood. This is what we love. This is what we want to, this is what we do in our free time. It's what we spend our money on. It's just like, you just want to see a little more sense of urgency coming from anybody that's ever played high school baseball.
Less political favor,
yeah. Coach.
Yeah. And like, I'll tell you this, the first commission meeting I ever went to was a day after I listened to a podcast Ty was on. This was probably like 4 years ago now. But I was driving back from Port Sulphur at the time, and Ty was talking about, all you got to do is just show up. Everybody makes a social media post. Everybody does this, but you just, at some point you got to show up, get in front of, get at the podium and tell them how you feel, in an educated and respectful way, of course. And that, that really motivated me because I was, I was passionate, but I really had no direction. I didn't know what to do. And so I reached out to Ty and, went to the commission meeting and really just started learning from there as to, how can we together, join efforts to to make an impact in moving good fisheries management down the field. And I just encourage anybody that is listening to this, you know, if you've never been to a commission meeting or even, you know, a legislative session, you know, take that one day and just show up, because I promise you it'll be a game changer for you, especially.
Yeah. And also, you're already also paying for those guys to be up there at the podium. You might as well make them hear you out once every now and then.
Yeah. And I mean, and kind of pivoting off of that, talking about, you know, those guys listening to us. I mean, you know, I know we talk a lot about the legislators and such, but, you know, I think back to Representative Ogeron coming onto this podcast, you know, a couple episodes ago, and the conversations that we've had. And I mean, that's highly commendable. Like, I have a lot of respect for him for doing that, because I mean, that's everything that we're talking about. Like, if every elected official had cared that way and put in that effort through just simple humility, and we don't have to see eye to eye. You may have this, you may think X, I may think Y or Z, but as long as we can have a civil conversation, you know, that's based around humility and respect for one another, we're going to do a lot of good things. And so I just wanted to throw that out there. We don't have to agree, but as long as we can talk about it, you know, we're being productive. So,
well,
I just wanted to shout that out.
True, but also you got to hope somebody that's an influential person politically doesn't make a phone call, because, you know, all that can be true, but then the right guy makes a phone call and they're hamstrung.
Well, that's the other part of the equation.
And I'm not saying that happened to Ogeron, for the record. I'm not saying that. I'm not accusing anything, but just saying that's the nature of the beast. And, you know, it's a shame. But I think, you know, we kind of left it at a good spot. I think going forward, I'd love to see, you know, on these topics, people that are listening to this episode, keep looking for the blog post that we do around this stuff, because I'll just say we do a really good job of explaining the political process, what's going on, where we are in the game. This needs to go through the Senate. This needs to go through the commission and then oversight. You need to educate yourself about this stuff, because, like, you heard Ty in the beginning of this episode rattle off the process of where these bills go. And it's a dark trail and thorny bushes in the middle of the night with no flashlight. I mean, it's confusing. And just when you think you got it figured out, oh, wait, this is a resolution and not a bill, so this is different, and so on and so forth. So, you know, like, for instance, I mean, and we'll wrap it up here, but the redfish bill, that one didn't need to go to the governor's desk because it was a resolution, but the tarpon one had to go. Who would have known? I mean, you wouldn't know this if you looked at anybody else's stuff. It's confusing. So
yeah, nobody else has ever talked about that.
Yeah.
Good luck finding stuff like that on ChatGPT too, because it doesn't know a whole lot. I usually end up, if I
not
ask
even
it a question about
almighty
something,
AI.
Well, it's just like, I'm just looking at all the bills right here, and maybe this can be like an Easter egg in a podcast. I don't know if we have the authority to do that. Maybe Cody just X all this out if it's useless. But like, I'm just looking at the list of fisheries bills that were proposed and resolutions and everything. There's a few that weren't signed by the governor, a few that never were read. I mean, if one person that heard this, I mean, maybe, hopefully somebody listened to this whole damn thing. If one person that listened to all this can go and like mimic my list right here, just out of the blue, and chat won't help you, good luck. I did all this the old way of researching through web pages. But if one person can go and list all these things that were just the ones that were signed by the governor that are enacted right now, fisheries bills or resolutions, and, you know, get within one or two bills of my list right here. I mean, I don't know. Let's just send an email to the Guides Association webpage, and maybe we'll get you a hat or some kind of prize, because you earned it. You freaking earned it. If you listen to this whole damn podcast,
Tony will send them $500
and that.
Whoa.
I'm gonna make a different email real quick.
Well, guys, I love it. Well, let's call it there on an hour. I know we got another call coming up in a minute, and I've got to go back to ripping up carpet before that. So thanks for jumping on, boys. And as always, it was fun to commiserate together.